Has your size ever stopped you from traveling? Have you ever avoided going on an airplane for fear you'd have to buy two seats? Well, today we have an interview with someone, and that exact situation almost became a reality. Plus, your email, comments, and much, much more here on episode number 75 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Fat to Fit Radio. Jeff, what's going on?
Well, I'm finally getting over this cold I've had for 2 weeks, but let's get right into you. Last week, we were on your case about not losing any weight. How are you doing this week?
Well, I had, quadruple my weight loss from last week. I down to 234.5, and as you just pointed out before we started recording, believe that is a new low here on the show.
That's excellent. So were all of your goals right up at 9 or 10 like we hoped they would have been last week?
You know, and nothing's perfect. For my eating goals, I'm going to give it about 8 out of 10. We're doing pretty well. Exercise goals, about 9 out of 10. Still doing my workouts for the body transformation contest. So any of you out there, haven't heard anybody that's doing the contest along with me, but I'm going to smoke you all, so it doesn't matter. And motivation for the week, a good 8 out of 10.
That's great. Now that you have some momentum going again, remember that's 100 pounds down by show number 100. You have to be slow and steady to make that goal.
Well, I'm definitely not doing it fast, so I'm going to win the race here.
That is great to hear. But let's move right into our email and comment section.
All right, our first email is from Calum, and he wrote, "Hi guys, just recently started listening to your show and have really enjoyed it. I'm a 30-year-old male. I am 5'11" and weigh 187 pounds. My goal is 175 to 180, and I'm down from 248, which I've lost since last August. My concern is that by eating my goal calorie intake for the day, I find myself nearly sick to my stomach from the amount of food I am eating. What am I doing wrong, or should I rethink the amount of calories I am taking in? My current daily goal is approximately 2,100. On average, I eat 1,900 to 2,000 calories, but I can't find it in me to eat more. I exercise 5 to 6 times a week and focus mainly on cardio with a mild, moderate strength building workout with a more extreme core workout." Now, Jeff, I don't know how to answer this question. 2,100 calories for that size seems about right.
Well, and actually, we get a lot of email like this, and really, most people are amazed at how much food you can actually eat and lose weight if you're eating cleanly without eating a lot of processed foods. And I'm assuming that Calum is eating clean, healthy food. If you are eating 5 or 6 small meals a day, it does feel like all that you're doing is eating. Can you imagine how hard it is to get fat when all that you're eating is good food? It's actually pretty tough. But we need to put this in perspective, because he's having trouble eating 2,100 calories. We did some calculations here, and to maintain your weight at 248 pounds, you had to be eating an average of 3,400 calories a day to keep that weight up. You were probably eating much more as you were gaining that weight, so it isn't the amount of calories that you are eating that is a problem. You are simply experiencing that good food has so much more volume than just crap food. I mean, aren't you living the dream, eating until you're full and still losing weight?
Yeah, Calum, but you might run into trouble here. To maintain your 175-pound goal for the rest of your life, you'll need to eat 2,800 calories a day. That is 800 calories more than what you're eating right now. And you should be eating more than that right now. When you get closer to your goal weight, you want to gradually be able to start eating at your maintenance weight. And remember, we actually suggest eating at your goal weight maintenance level right now. And also, don't eat unhealthy food to increase your calories. I would just eat more of what you're already eating and eat more often throughout the day by adding more to those in-between meal snacks. Make them like mini meals. If you continue to never feel hungry and eat tons of food, how can you fail? Just make sure that you don't start eating all those calorically dense processed foods again.
And I was just thinking, there's one more possibility of why you're having trouble eating only 2,100 calories per day. And I'm thinking, how is your relationship with food right now? You've had some great success, but you've also been dieting for over a year on fairly low calorie. Some people start to almost get an aversion to food because they've been so concerned about limiting it and keeping track of it for so long. Many people after dieting for a long time just start to feel guilty about eating when they do eat. This might be what's starting to happen to you. It's hard not to have happened to you after dieting for so long. But then that is just another reason to take it maybe a little easier and not make drastic reductions in calories. You know, like we suggest, start eating a little bit more. Start eating at those goal weight calories right now so you can ease your way into it.
All right, well, let's get to our second email, and it's from Hamish.
Hi, guys. I've just discovered your show, and I'm enjoying the approach. A trove of useful info in most of the episodes makes it a great resource for my buffer time, walking, in the car, etc., and provides food for thought and health. I have two questions, and we're going to take them one at a time.
All right, let's get to that first question. Is there a limit to how much the body can digest and convert to fat in one go? A friend was just saying how one dessert had 500 calories in a serving and that he could eat 6 to 8 easily in one go. Can the body actually convert that many, 3,000 to 4,000 calories, to fat in one go, or does some of it pass through?
Well, the answer may surprise a lot of people, but everybody digests a little bit differently. Some people, when they eat 500 calories, will get almost 500 calories of energy out of it. Others might only get 450 calories of energy and eat the same thing. Some people's digestive systems are simply more efficient than others. So, in a sense, all people will have some calories pass through them without being digested. Now, does that mean heavier people just have better, more efficient digestion? Possibly, but I don't think that's the big difference. There's also the concept of net calories, which means that certain foods take a lot of calories to break down and digest, so you don't get all of the calories out of them. Proteins are a good example. If you eat a lean chicken breast with 250 calories in it, your body may end up actually digesting 200 or so of them after all the energy you used to digest it. There's also many plant foods that your body is simply incapable of digesting. When you eat things like celery or apples, a large percentage of them is made up of cellulose, which we consider to be fiber, that your body just can't digest. Now, on the other hand, processed foods are very easy for your body to digest, so you absorb almost 100% of those calories. A chocolate bar with 250 calories, say, will give you 250 empty calories. Eating 250 calories of clean, healthy, natural foods might leave you with 200 calories full of vitamins and minerals and fiber, which will make you feel fuller longer. So back to your question, is there a limit to the number of calories that your body can digest in one go? I'm sure that there is some sort of upper limit, but this would be different for most people, and I don't think that you could ever get any sort of definitive answer for anyone in all situations. Most people would make themselves sick by the time they reached this point. I mean, kids do it all the time eating candy, and they get a stomachache. People eat fried foods and end up with diarrhea and gas. If you are eating calories and they are not being digested, you will be spending a lot of time in the bathroom. I don't want to be graphic here, but if your body isn't digesting food, it comes out as undigested food. But here's a couple of rules of thumb. Number one, if you don't eat very often, like only once or twice a day, your body becomes more efficient at storing calories and fat. Number two, if you eat very low calories continuously, your body will be more likely to store calories as fat. Number three, your body will adapt to eating more if you regularly overeat. Think of people who continually stretch out their stomachs when they eat. They can fit more food in there without discomfort, therefore it's easier for them to eat more. And I have one last point here. People who eat very cleanly and then have a greasy hamburger or fried chicken or a decadent dessert will often get sick from it because it is such a shock to their system and what their body is used to. A lot of those calories will pass through them. So I guess the world does balance out. If you eat very cleanly and then once in a while have some bad food, a lot of it will pass right through you. But the downside is you won't be feeling so hot. So I would say that if you aren't sick when you overeat, those calories are most likely going to stick to your thighs or love handles.
All right, let's get on to question number two here from Hamish. Can the body go into starvation mode if you're exercising on a daily basis while maintaining a low-calorie diet? And low-calorie is here at 1,200 calories a day. We know that the BMR can suffer in downshift based on continuous scarcity of calories, but does this apply when you're forcing the body to burn those calories with exercise?
And the short answer is yes. You can't exercise your body out of a starvation mode. Exercise does increase your metabolism, but it can't trick your body out of thinking that it isn't starving. Starvation and exercise have always gone hand in hand throughout history. Think of it this way. When a famine struck, people were forced to travel in search of food. They got lots of exercise. When you're starving in a famine, it is a good thing that your metabolism slows down to a crawl to keep you alive. Just because you start traveling looking for food, your body isn't going to give up its starvation response. It will only give it up with the introduction of food, and not just one meal. It takes a week or two before your body will believe that it is out of danger and will get regular food on a regular basis. On the flip side, if you lose weight mainly by exercising with only a slight decrease in calories, You don't risk your metabolism slowing down at all, and it will actually increase.
All right, very good. Well, we got another question here, and this one is from Mike, and it's from a few months ago, and he had some interesting insights about what has helped him with his weight loss. And he wrote here, "Personally, I found that reconditioning my brain has helped me lose over 80 pounds so far. The last time I was in a burger joint with a huge burger and a plate of fries and onion rings in front of me was after I had lost 75 pounds and I was on a splurge day. I looked around and saw that everyone over the age of 21 and a significant number of those under that age as well were obese. Not overweight, they were all obese, just as I was before I started this journey.
I found myself really disgusted with myself, with the restaurant, if you finished their 1 pound burger, you got your picture on the wall, and with the other people there. Meditation and focus on this led me to the conclusion that I was really just disgusted with myself and the way I was and could easily become again. That old me was fat, in pain in my joints from carrying the extra weight, and unable to do so many things I love to do, like ski, hike, backpack, and other things in the outdoors. So now, whenever I look at the classic American burger place or pancake house or the cheap food source, I see it as simply disgusting. I cannot even bring myself to go through a drive-thru for a cup of coffee anymore."
That's awesome. You know, just he's reprogrammed his brain. And that's really, it's 90% of weight loss. I mean, if you can get past the, I need to eat that food, you can go a long way.
You know, and this reminds me of if I go into a convenience store and I see the chocolate bar aisle, it never crosses my mind to pick that up because I'm not that type of person anymore. And he's really turned it around. He's not the type of person who finds burger joints appealing at all. And I think that's just great that he kind of reprogrammed his mind and has a new outlook on it. Well, let's move on to our last item. And this is just another informational item. And this came from Marianne. And this is a follow-up from last week's show where she asked about the drug phentermine, and she was having some severe reactions where she was getting angry. And we responded that phentermine is a stimulant and can be quite dangerous.
Yep, she wrote, "Hey guys, and thanks again for answering back so quickly. Just to let you know how bad it got for me, so you might pass it on, that this drug affected my mood so much that I almost lost my job of 5 years because I snapped at a coworker. This drug also made me lose sleep. I stayed up for about 2 days even though I was so tired. I've completely stopped taking it now, and I'm thankful it's not making me sick. This was not worth the trouble that it has caused me. I just got sucked in by a friend that lost 16 pounds in 2 weeks with it, that she has gained back already. Anyway, thanks again for letting everyone know what a bad drug this is."
That's right. We totally agree. And if you haven't heard the last show, show number 74, take a listen. You'll learn a lot about phentermine.
All right, that's going to do it for the email and comments. If you'd like to send in yours, email or comment, you can do it a couple ways. First one is by leaving a comment on the website at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Voicemails are available just by clicking on the call me button on the website, fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, now it's time for the web report. Jeff, what amazing article do you have for us today?
Well, I have two different things this week, one for the women and one for the guys. Now, to start off for the women, I have a link that goes to prevention.com, which is the weight loss simulator for women. And what you have is your before and your after pictures. You literally build your body, your face, your figure, your bust size, your current weight, your goal weight. You can even change swimsuits, what you're wearing now and what you're wearing at your goal weight. And you can really see what you will look like for size, what you look now, and what you will look in the future. And it's really quite neat to see this goal. It's very authentic because you can change the way you look to match very close to how you look now, and it will reduce the fat when you get smaller and show what you're going to look like. And I do like how you can put different swimsuits on. You can have your total goal right in front of you, printed out, and this is what you look like now, and this is what you will look like in the future. I think it's just a really good thing for goal setting.
And men, please do not make a picture of your wife. That would not go over well, I don't believe.
That might not go over so well. This is what you look like now, and this is the way I wished you look.
No, that would not be a large idea.
But anyways, moving on. I have a second article. Now, this is just for the guys. And this is from Men's Fitness, and it's entitled Shop Once and Eat for a Week. So they have a menu here for the guys that for under $50, they tell you what to go out and shop. You create 10 meals. 5 lunches and 5 dinners, and these are the muscle-building, healthy meals that are low in calories and just good for you. And this is, go out and literally buy this. You'll have everything done for a week, and it's totally healthy. So there's something for the women where you can visually see what your goal weight will look like on you. And for the guys, you know how to go out and shop and have 10 meals prepared that are all different and all healthy. So Russ, what do you have for us this week?
Well, if you all remember, I had plantar fasciitis a while back, and it was very, very painful. Well, an article came across my desk here from Wired Science. It says here, to run better, start by ditching your Nikes. And the idea behind this is a little shoe. It's not really a shoe. It's more like a glove for your foot. And the idea behind this is man was meant to run barefoot. And years of using these high-tech running shoes where you strike the pavement with the heel of your foot, it's doing damage to our feet. And you can actually run better if you learn how to run basically on the ball of your foot. There's a little video here. It shows you the difference between running with the regular running shoe and running with one of these foot gloves. And it looks very interesting. And it mentions here in the article that plantar fasciitis and some of these foot problems that we're having now, they weren't around when we weren't wearing these really, you know, high-tech running shoes and beating ourselves with running on our heels. And instead, they suggest running on the ball of your foot. Now, Jeff, have you ever tried this? Have you heard about this before? Because you've done some running.
No, I've always been concerned with getting the most cushioning and the most support. And I mean, it does look interesting. There might be something to it. I guess I'll wait and see what the results of some long-term studies are, see if people are getting better with their running or not. Personally, I would be hitting my heels pretty hard because I do land on my heels, so I would have to change totally how my running stride is.
Yeah, they mentioned here in the article that you really need to change the way you run, you know, hitting the ball of your foot first and using your arch the way it was supposed to be used as a spring. And when we stopped using that and putting a lot of arch support in shoes, that's when we had a lot more ankle injuries and plantar fasciitis and other injuries related to running. Anyway, it's very interesting to me, and I think probably you can get a lot of benefit without actually having to buy these kind of, you know, weird shoes. You could just kind of change your gait a little bit and maybe get a lot of the benefit out of this research without actually having to go out and buy this and spend more money.
Well, it is definitely an interesting picture. They kind of look like regular gloves with all of your toes individually separated through these shoes. Kind of strange. They're pretty interesting, but take a look at the link in the show notes if you want to see a picture of these interesting shoes. We're going to move on to our feature section. And today we're talking about airlines and the overweight. Statistics tell us that 66% of Americans are overweight or obese. Add that to the fact that seats in commercial airlines are crammed tight to allow no wasted space. Wasted space means they didn't make all the money they could on that flight. So, as a byproduct of this need to cram in more seats, those seats are extremely small.
That's right. And how many of you have heard horror stories of overweight individuals being forced to purchase two seats because they did not completely fit into one? Well, our guest today had a close call while on a business trip recently with just that scenario. His name is Steve Klassen. He's a systems engineer. He's also a podcaster over at geekfit.com. So welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So, Steve, where were you going and what happened?
So I was going to, I want to say Chicago. So I was leaving from my home, the Portland airport, right? And I get in there, get through security, all the normal routine, no problems. And I sit down. It's an early flight, so it's like 7 o'clock maybe in the morning. And I'm sitting down right at the gate area where we're waiting to board the plane, right? I think I had probably about a half hour to spare, so maybe 10 minutes before they're about to say, everyone get in line, let's get on the plane. And one of the Southwest employees comes over, and I'm sitting at the end. I'm on the last seat on the edge. He sits right next to me, so instantly no personal space left. And he leans over to me, and it's funny. It's like this split-second thinking you hear about all the time where, you're, you know, all these thoughts go through your head in a very short time. I'm thinking, there's an employee sitting next to me. I have a ticket for this flight. He wants my ticket. I mean, that's the only thing I can think is he's wanting to give it to somebody else and give me something nice in return for doing this nice thing. So I'm thinking, oh, goody, I've got some kind of good thing coming. And he says, do you have a ticket for this flight? Which just confirms what I'm thinking. I said, yes. Yes, I do have a ticket for this flight. He says, well, we have a policy. I don't know if you've heard about it. If you don't fit in a seat, if you don't fit between the arms on the seat, you have to buy a second plane ticket. And he just kind of pauses there, like as if I'm going to volunteer to whip my wallet out. And I was like, okay, I don't know where you're going with this. And he says, well, do you fit in a seat? And I said, yeah, yep, I fit in a seat. And I'm just, at this point, I'm just mortified. I'm like, I'm mad, I'm scared, I'm just all these things. It's like instant confrontation, right?
So I guess, Steve, I just want to jump in here. So how large are you? Are you a really, really big guy or just a little bit overweight?
So I am about the time that this happened, I would be 370 and I'm 5'10". I'm built a little bit oddly. I mean, as odd goes, I have a lot of weight in my shoulders and arms. So most of my weight is carried above my waist, not the part they're concerned with. I have like no rear end to speak of. It's not like I'm having to like squeeze into two and three seats to sit down. So ultimately, you know, when we get to that part, I didn't have to buy a plane ticket because the portion that I carry my weight in isn't, you know, between those armrests. So, 370.
Yeah. So you are a big guy, but I know we have listeners who are larger than you and probably will have these same situations come up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So continue on. What happened?
So he says, you know, well, he asked me, will you fit between the armrests? I tell him yes. He rephrases the question, now including the amount of time this flight's going to be. This is a 4-hour flight to some layover. I don't remember where we were going, but he says, can you sit between them for 4 hours comfortably? He emphasizes comfortably. I won't be comfortable, but I fit between the armrests. And he says, well, we're going to go ahead and take you down beforehand and let you get settled and make sure that you fit. And if it turns out you don't, we'll bring you back up. We'll sort out another plane ticket for you. So that's where that started.
So did anyone else around you hear this? I mean, was it very discreet or was it really kind of overtly like, this is what we're doing to you?
The people right around me were obviously interested in why this person was talking to me. And I don't know what their thoughts were. And looking back on it, they probably assumed it was because I was a big guy or that he was offering me something he wasn't going to offer them, you know, like maybe a free plane ticket plus $200. You know, I've seen them sweeten the pot sometimes if they've oversold a flight to have someone give up their ticket. And I've volunteered for that several times. So I don't know what they were thinking, but it was definitely the fact that he was talking to me. Everyone was real obvious. Everyone was watching. I don't know that anyone heard anything. He was being discreet.
So you've been on a lot of flights. You've traveled for business.
Yep.
And is this the first time this ever happened to you?
First time. Yep. And I flew, I want to say at least 60 flights last year. It was a lot of flights.
So you're saying they walked you right onto the plane, they followed you in and literally just made you sit down and then made sure that you wouldn't spill over into the next seat?
Pretty much. He says, okay, we're ready for you. I assume at that point they had the pilot or whomever had to be there. Picked up my stuff, walked onto the plane. He let me have my choice of where I wanted to sit. I picked a couple rows back, put my stuff up, and sat down. I initially sat in the center seat so that he could watch me both sides put the arms down, which I did. And he says, well, you might be more comfortable on the window seat. And he said something. I thought he was trying to tell me that the arm comes up on the window side, so I'm only really having to deal with one arm. But it didn't come up, so I don't know what he was trying to tell me. But he says, you might be more comfortable next to the window. So I moved. You know, at this point, I just want to get on the plane without putting out more money. Because at this point, I'm terrified. Because the way my travel works, the customer pays my plane ticket. I can't ask a customer to pay for two plane tickets because their engineer is overweight.
Right. It's going to come out of your pocket.
Ultimately. Right. I mean, I don't know what they would do with like a, we have to be equal and everybody has to play nice if they would force the customer to buy this other ticket because, you know, for whatever reason, but it's not going to go over. Either Sigma, my company will eat it, Sigma, or the customer, I mean, the customer is not going to do it.
So do you think that, I will say, did you want to say the airline? You didn't mention the airline.
I did, Southwest.
Southwest.
Yeah.
So could they have handled it any better? I think, I mean, I took a look at their website and they do have a policy for this. Could they have handled it better? I think it was handled pretty well.
It was handled about as well as it could have been. I mean, the guy, he was discreet. He talked as softly as he possibly could and still had me hear him. I thought the fact that he reiterated it made me answer the question twice was a little insulting. As if the question were going to change, you know, if I was going to bleed out of the seat because I was there for more than an hour and a half and I couldn't contain myself. Yeah. I don't know what kind of amorphous thing I was in the seat, but that part of it bothered me, but they did weigh in on the post on GigFit. You saw a couple posts down. Southwest did reply and came back and said, you know, we're really sorry you had that experience when it was ultimately unnecessary. I'm paraphrasing, but at that point it was a lot of throat clearing and not a lot of talking. It was just basically, we're here and waving hands, we're Southwest, and here's an apology, sort of. which was, and then they actually came back after I urged them to read the responses, because several people weighed in on the comments, and all they started doing was inserting bits from their frequently asked questions, to which I replied, Jason's already posted the frequently asked questions, you don't need to come here and keep feeding them to us.
So just in general, what were their policies? Were there weight restrictions, or was it just you show up and if we think you won't fit, then we're going to talk to you?
They, I read their frequently asked questions. This section is called Customers of Size, and I read all of them, and they were actually very well put together responses. I mean, they're very diplomatic, and they actually asked all the questions that, that people put on the comments, which was, you know, why don't you just sell one fewer seats? Why don't you make them, you know, more room? You know, people sell furniture and they were making furniture wider and deeper to deal with, you know, the average person now. You know, flights need to follow suit. So all of the questions that people were prying in the comments are addressed in the frequently asked questions. So, and they had halfway decent, reasonable responses. So I read through it. I was slightly swayed, but I just felt singled out. But I figured, how can I take this and flip it so that if I happen to not need this ticket, but I'm on the border, can I make that work to my advantage? Can I get on the flight first every single time I fly and not sweat, you know, getting in and getting, you know, the proper seating ticket?
So now you're walking in front of the kiosk, the counter there saying, hey, I'm kind of big. And then you're hoping, hey, I'll get on this before the screaming children and the...
So I did that.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm coming back from the exact same trip I just left on, and I walked up to the front counter, and I hit record on my iPhone and put it on the counter. I said, hey, I am one of your customers of size. You know, I gave him a smile and said, you know, I was approached on my trip up here, but they had food in Philadelphia, so we can't be sure that I fit on the plane this time. Or Chicago, or wherever I happen to be. So should I pre-board, give me one of those little blue porting or blue pre-board slips so we can make sure that I fit on the plane. And she says, well, did you have to buy another ticket there? It's very clear that it's up to the person at the gate how they're going to deal with it. This person wanted no part of it. She was not interested in charging me a second ticket. She wasn't interested in looking at me for a second ticket. There were several people on that particular flight home that needed a second ticket. That it was obvious that whoever sat next to them was not going to be comfortable at all. And that armrest was not going down. And they weren't approached at all. So I'm tempted to just start taking pictures at the gate every time I fly and just put them on the website and circle, this dude needs another ticket. This dude, you know. And none of these people are getting confronted. So.
It's very subjective. It's not...
Oh, absolutely.
It's incredible.
It's new profiling, basically. It's a new form of profiling.
To put a more positive spin on it, has this motivated you? I mean, you do the Geek Fit podcast. It's really geared towards health for the geek. And has this motivated you to kind of get that weight down now?
Yeah, it has. I've been kind of stagnating. When I lost the initial 150, I got to 300 pounds. I took the travel job and put 70 back on. And I've kind of carried that 70 pounds for the last 8 months. And I haven't really gone down at all. Well, when that happened, it was like, there's no way that this second ticket situation can actually come to fruition. So I need to, you know, I need to lose the weight. So I've been more consistent when I'm on the road, eating better, making sure that I'm working out.
So Steve, after going through all of this and having a month or two to think about this and then noticing larger people getting onto planes and not being bothered, how do you think airlines should handle this, or should it be up to the passenger to decide to buy an extra ticket if they're not comfortable, if they're too large?
So as I was reading the frequently asked questions, I tried to put myself in the place of a skinny person who's sitting next to me who, you know, either doesn't want the armrest down or doesn't want the armrest up, doesn't want to be anywhere near touching me. I could see I was sympathetic to their perspective. I don't know. I guess I kind of sympathized with them. But is a second seat necessary? Because you could always put someone next to a smaller passenger or a child and that's actually one of the frequently asked questions. Why don't we just arrange ourselves, you know, like Tetris, so that we're a big person's next to a little person's next to a big person and we're all happy. And I always fly Southwest for the same reason. If somebody sits next to me, it was their choice. Or they were extremely late to the flight, or they were trying to catch one and they got bumped in. So if there's anybody sitting next to me and having to deal with my size, and ultimately it's my chest too, whenever I, and this is radio, but I have to sit like this when I fly, literally my hands tucked under my arms so that my arms are over my body. And that's literally how I am the whole flight.
So you are suffering again on this flight. I mean, even though it's not, you know, in the waist and the hips where you're touching the seats, I mean, the arms are crossing your arms, you know, like hands in your armpits, kind of a...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the only way I can cross my arms without my hands going to sleep, basically. And I do that because I'm trying to make the people around me more comfortable, because I know how wide my shoulders are. And I, you know, am just uncomfortable for the whole flight. And I know that. The seats are just too narrow. There's really nothing else to do. Like, I don't see what else they could do to make it a better situation. They're trying to appease the skinny people and the overweight people, and I'm sure the skinny people yell just as loud as the overweight people. I know because I've actually had one screaming at me. I had a flight where I was in the middle seat, and I had a guy next to me, and he yelled at me the entire flight about, you know, how he paid for as much for his ticket as I paid for mine, and I shouldn't be encroaching on his space. And the seat, the arms were down, but I think my knee touched him at some point or something. I carry most of my weight on my inner thighs, so it's really hard to keep my legs straight, even with the armrests down, which are going almost to the ends of my legs. And I think I may have bumped him at some point, or maybe, you know, it was my arm, which again, I'm being uncomfortable to make everyone else comfortable. And that guy was having no part of it. He asked to be moved several times, actually went up, I think spent most of the flight standing in the back of the plane. And it did not care what I thought about it. It was really rude. So,
well, I think it's definitely an uncomfortable situation for anyone. Just think if you had two larger people getting the last two seats, it's going to be really uncomfortable for them. I don't really think it's an issue of discrimination. I think it's like when certain people wear clothing, it's just too small. No matter how much you weigh, if it's too small, you know, it's just uncomfortable. And you might see ounces of body fat on people when normally you wouldn't think they had any fat on them. I think the planes are just simply too small, and either the planes have to get a little bit bigger or something has to happen.
Yeah, the statistics say, 66% of Americans are now overweight or obese.
Right.
Yet the airlines continue to make smaller and smaller seats, pack more and more people on these flights so they can maximize their profits. Well, something's got to give there. I mean, it's right. Either going to be you go to another airline because this one is catering to the cheap flight, small seat, or, you know, but you have to go to, you know, a larger or business class or something else, and you have to pay more.
Even the business class, you know, first class on Delta, for instance, their seats are not much bigger. I mean, even the first class seats. The only difference is you don't have someone sitting directly next to you. You have a little bit of separation. So actually the upper body problem would go away on a first class seat, but the seats are no wider. That was why I went to Southwest, so that if anybody sat next to me, it was their choice. I always am religious about getting an A ticket so that I'm one of the first people on the plane. So if somebody sits next to me, I'm sorry. You were the last dude on the plane. Or you did have a C-59 ticket. You know why you were the last dude on the plane. So I'm sorry, you have to deal with this. There was one lady, and I remember having this exact same experience, where I didn't know that seatbelt extenders existed. And so I got on the plane, and it was like, it won't fit. And I'm like, oh, God. I'm not, you know, at that point, I wasn't conditioned to, you know, be putting out this much money for plane tickets. So it was a big deal to put out $400 for a plane ticket. And I'm thinking, I'm not going to get to take this flight because I simply can't clasp the belt. And she had the same situation. And she's like, you know, look, I can't do the seatbelt. And the lady told her, well, then you can't get on the flight. You need to get off. And we got all the way to the front of the plane and says, oh, I'm just kidding. And handed her an extender.
Oh, my God.
She was mortified.
That is not fun. That would be even more embarrassing, I think, that you think of the whole idea is you're going to have to get off the flight because you can't fit in a seatbelt.
Right.
I mean, that's reprehensible.
And I have to get an extender every time I get on a flight. I just know it. So I get on the flight. I sit down. I wait for everyone to get settled. I hit the call button. And I was a little offended the first time it happened, and I've gotten over it. They don't even ask me what I want. They just bring me the seatbelt extender. Some of them will wait and go, well, what do you want? And I'll be like, the hand sign for extender, and then they'll bring it to me. But some of them just bring it to me. Here, fatty, go.
Well, Steve, I think we're really fortunate that you could come on the show this week. It's a lot different when you hear about someone who said they couldn't fit on a plane and were questioned about their size, but to actually hear it from someone and what they went through and what they're feeling. I'm sure we have listeners who are in that category or who might fear they might become in that category if things keep going the way that they are for most people.
Go forth and fly.
So, Russ, I got to tell you, I really felt for Steve there. That's quite an embarrassing thing to have happen to you.
You know, every time I take a flight, it's an unfounded fear, but I do have that fear that what if the seatbelt doesn't fit? That was one that resonated with me because I'm like, I don't know if that seatbelt's going to fit around me. It always does, and with plenty of room to spare, but for some reason, that particular fear is always in the back of my mind. And also, you know, he mentioned he was holding his arms in. Well, that is the widest part of my body at any time, even when I was, you know, 60 pounds heavier. And so I always tend to keep my arms kind of in, you know, folded in my lap, just so I don't make the people next to me uncomfortable. It's normally my wife and you know, some stranger, but I try to get an aisle seat or a window seat just for that reason.
Well, I think one thing from this interview, I think this might have motivated some of our listeners to keep their weight in check, because this is not a situation that anyone wants to have happen to them.
That's right. When we started the show, there were those items we asked you about that really the catalyst to make you lose weight. There's always going to be one of those catalysts, like it's whether it's a reunion, whether it's somebody, you know, you're mocked in elementary school, whatever it is, you always have that one point in the past where you're like, oh, I got to lose weight. And, you know, maybe this was Steve's, you know, I'm going to lose weight because I don't want to ever happen to have it happen that I have to buy two tickets.
I remember on a show, now this is almost 2 years ago, that you were with your kids at an amusement park and you couldn't fit on the ride?
That's correct. Yeah, just recently I was able to ride on that ride. But yeah, there's a couple of rides at this park at Legoland down in San Diego area that you have to be a certain weight to get on the ride. Well, it happens to be that myself and my four-year-old at the time were over the weight limit. So I had to tell him, you know, it's one of his favorite rides, that we can't go on because dad's too fat. And, you know, that's very depressing. It's one of those moments. It was at a time when I was actually losing weight, but I hadn't lost enough weight yet to get on it. And just recently, I was able to do that with him, with both of my five-year-olds. And, oh, it was an awesome time. And so that's those motivating things like that. When you actually reach that goal and you've mastered that thing that that you couldn't do because you're overweight, it feels so good.
Well, let's get people on the right track. And let's start off with your healthy recipe of the week, Russ.
Well, this week's recipe came in from listener Jen for a spinach frittata. She says that she makes this for a husband who will normally complain about a non-meat-based dinner, but not when she serves this frittata. And so take a look at it. It's from the Mayo Clinic website, which I didn't know they had recipes over there. But it's got some killer ingredients, eggs plus egg whites, some bell pepper, onion, some little potatoes, some basil, a little mozzarella cheese, and it's only 176 calories per serving. So check it out, the spinach frittata, thanks to listener Jen.
That's right, and if any other listeners have some great recipes for us, just send it to us at podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Love to read those, love to try them out. So Jeff, what's our homework for this week?
Well, the homework this week is to do what's called an urban hike. Most of us travel the exact same streets day after day. Your goal is to explore on foot any streets, parks, paths, or areas fairly close to where you live. Any place within half an hour of home that you haven't been to in a few months, take a stroll past. You might just discover some nice areas that you might want to walk or jog by in the future. Just having a simple goal of exploration can burn calories. And one more thing, if you discover a hill or a good set of stairs, make sure that you thoroughly explore them. Sometimes it takes a few passes up and down.
I like that, an urban hike. Hadn't thought of that before. Cool. So, Jeff, what is our quote for the week?
Well, the quote comes from one of our listeners, and I can't remember who it was, but it was in their signature in their email. So this appears on all of their emails. And the quote is, "The only goal out of reach is the one you stop striving for."
Very cool. Well, I want to thank Steve Klassen from GeekFit for coming in and talking about his experience on the airlines. That was an awesome interview. And thank everyone for participating in the show. Check out all the show notes at fat2fitradio.com, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fat2fitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fat2fitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.